It's 2:40. In sports, it's an off day in the Cardinals-Dodgers playoff series. Game 3 is tomorrow night at Busch Stadium, with the Cardinals trying to stay alive after losing 2 in Los Angeles. Joel Piniero will start for the Cardinals, and Vicente Padilla will pitch for Los Angeles. Former Major League player and manager Hal Lanier will manage the new minor league team in Normal, Illinois next season. The Normal Corn Belters start play in the Independent Frontier League in May. Illinois hosts Michigan State on tomorrow's Big Ten football schedule. Northwestern has a non-conference game at home against Miami of Ohio. Eastern Illinois is at Penn State. Illinois State travels to Southern Illinois, and Western Illinois plays at Youngstown State. Northern Illinois has a bye week. And after more than a century on the sidelines, golf will return to the Olympics at the Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro. Rugby, last played in 1924, is coming back as well. Both were reinstated for the 2016 and 2020 Games after a vote today by the International Olympic Committee. That's sports.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, now with a new dinner menu. Tapas served every evening until 2 a.m., along with lunch on Friday from 10:30 to 2:30, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Information on menus, wine, and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
Say something happens in your backyard that needs attention. Without lifting a finger, without even noticing, mysteriously it's taken care of. For free. NPR science correspondent Robert Krulwich has the details.
It begins with a... Yeah, kind of a thwack against your kitchen window or the wall of your house. So you step outside, and there, lying in the grass, is a little bird. And when you lean over and you look closely, you see it's dead. So you look away. And then maybe a day, 2 days later, you pass by that very spot on your lawn, and the corpse is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Totally gone.
Yeah.
And you didn't move it. So where did it go? Well, one possibility, says Professor Bernd Heinrich at the University of Vermont, is you have just received the services of a very remarkable pair of beetles.
Well, they are burying beetles. They are the undertakers of the small animals in the forest, the little birds and mice, rodents.
So if I'm a bird lying dead on a lawn, they would know that I'm there?
Yeah, very shortly after you die, you're going to emit some scent that they can smell apparently for miles.
And because natural recycling is a very competitive business,
they have to get there before the flies can get it, before a raccoon or crow or raven picks it up. So they work very fast.
And these flying beetles are, how big are they?
You know, as big as a big bumblebee.
Which is not very big if you're trying to hoist a dead starling or a dead mouse on your back and lug it off to soft ground. But when these beetles, and it's a family business, it's a mom-and-pop kind of arrangement, when they get you where they want you, they start to dig.
They bury you. They start digging underneath you, removing the dirt and throwing it to the sides until gradually you start to sink down.
So how long does it take them to bury a whole bird?
You know, in a night, and you're buried totally.
Then, says Professor Heinrich, in a kind of... I'm not quite sure how to put this, in a sort of happy moment, the two beetles will mate,
yeah,
which
mm-hmm.
produces beetle babies safely underground.
And they build a little nest for the larvae.
Mm-hmm. And then the parents munch on the bird or on the mouse, and they chew the food on behalf of their children.
The young actually beg. They are sort of analogous to birds, to a pair of birds feeding their young.
And after a few days, those babies mature, and they become flying beetles, and they take off refueled with bits of mouse or bird, and they rejoin the neighborhood.
Yes, yes.
And it's just this kind of finish, says Professor Heinrich, dying and then being scattered up and about everywhere that he wants when he dies. No tight coffin for me, he says.
You know, being sealed up, totally removed from all the natural processes that normally occur with every animal on Earth is very somehow frightening. It seems unnatural.
But I think, don't most people find that being eaten is the thing that's frightening? And a little, I don't want to get eaten
yeah.
by a beetle.
No, I don't find that frightening at all. Hmm. I find that comforting to be part of the ecosystem.
And he's not alone. There's an old Lee Hayes song sung by the great Pete Seeger.
If I should die before I wake, all my bone and sinew take, Put me in the compost pile. Decompose me for a while.
You laugh, but, you know, there are a lot of people who hate the idea of being decomposed. So.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's decompose that's the emphasis here. It's the grow and the compose, to be composed into grass, to be composed into ravens, to be composed into flowers and trees. You know, that's a comforting thought to me.
But it's not like you're looking forward to the idea, though.
Well, I don't really relish being eaten, anything like that. I think it's just part of the cost and giving back. I realize I have killed untold hundreds of thousands to live. All of us have, because we all live off other life. And just to remove ourselves totally so that nobody else can feed on us, just somehow it seems sacrilegious to me.
All that I am will feed the trees and little fishies in the seas. When radishes and corn you munch, you may be having me for lunch.
But when you choose to be buried in a tight coffin, says Professor Heinrich, you do lock yourself off from the trees and the animals that you know and the critters that you've lived with.
Worms, water, sun will have their way.
Why not share yourself with the world that you know, he asks.
I find that comforting, to be part of the ecosystem.
And then excrete me with a grin, chortling, there goes Lee again.
It's not everybody's way to get buried, but it is
right.
One way. Robert Krulwich, NPR News.
It's 2:47. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We hope you'll join us Sunday afternoon at 5 for a live broadcast of Keeping the Faith. Each week, host Steve Shoemaker and his guests explore issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. This week, guest host Don Nolan talks with Zachariah Ozovic about the Muslim Intercultural Friendship Foundation. That's Keeping the Faith this Sunday afternoon at 5 here on AM 580. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn, and my guest in this portion of the program is Sharon Mundy Dorsey. She's a member of St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Urbana, where she serves on the Peace and Justice Committee. She's also been involved in peace and justice activities in Champaign-Urbana for many years. She joins me this afternoon to tell us about an interfaith day of retreat that will take place at St. Patrick's Parish Center Saturday, October 17th. That's 1 week from tomorrow. Sharon, welcome.
Thank you, Celeste.
So who is invited to attend?
Well, it's open to people of all ages and religious denominations and spiritual paths and traditions. So really, it's open to anyone that's interested in interfaith work.
Okay. The list of co-sponsors is long and impressive. We don't have time to read all the names, but maybe you'd give us an idea of some of the folks that are involved.
Well, there's both churches in the area as well as some of the groups here on campus. For instance, the Channing Murray Foundation is one of the ones that's co-sponsoring, and the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, which you were just mentioning. There's also a Buddhist organization that is involved, and the Unitarian Universalist Friends Meeting, and some of the different Catholic churches in the area. But that's just part of the list. But we really were trying to involve a wide variety. The Ministerial Alliance is another one.
Okay. You're calling this retreat One Light, Many Lamps. What's the significance of the retreat's name?
Well, it's to show that we can all come together, even though we have different spiritual paths or traditions, that we can all look and see that there is unity that we can work towards among the various faiths and spiritual paths.
Hmm. What's on the program?
Well, it's a program, Celeste, that's going to be very experiential. And we want people to have an opportunity to learn about the different ways in which people honor their faith and their belief in God. So there are different things that we will be doing with people in terms of song and different rituals, different dance and activities that show these commonalities. And the person who is facilitating this, Brother Joseph Kilavecchi, is a Dominican Fryer, and he's been leading these retreats all over the country for about 20 years. I was able to attend one in Milwaukee last year, and that's what inspired me to bring him to this community.
What was that experience like for you last year?
It was extremely powerful in the sense that he was just like a master weaver, bringing together these different prayers and different traditions and helping us all understand and participate in them. So for me, it was a very unique experience because it wasn't just hearing about it, but actually engaging and experiencing it. That's what I thought was so meaningful about it.
Yeah. Now, Brother Joseph is a founding director of the Shem Center for Interfaith Spirituality in Oak Park.
Yes.
Can you tell us just a little bit about that center?
Well, it formed actually after the 1993 World Parliament of Religions. They had a conference in Chicago, and one of the things that parliament talked about is the fact that there needed to be healing among the different religions. And they put together a document that encouraged the different faith communities to come together. So Brother Joseph was at this parliament and then from that formed this particular organization. So for the last 20 years, they've been doing a variety of things around interfaith activities.
Mm. Was it your experience last year in Milwaukee at a retreat that led you at St. Patrick's to host this retreat, One Light, Many Lamps?
Yes, it was from that. And also, over the years, I have become more involved in activities that are of an interfaith basis. And so I felt this was an important step for us because actually, within the Catholic Church after Vatican II, one of the things that was promoted or encouraged was that there needed to be more collaboration, more understanding of other religions, and more respect and work in interfaith activities. So because I've been involved in peace and justice activities, this seemed like a very important step for our parish, as well as to bring the community together. And I know there's been many wonderful projects already, like, for example, the Whirlwind Project is another group that's been working for many years to do interfaith activities, as is the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. And I just learned about a group that received an award, the Interfaith Alliance on Campus. So I think in our community there's a lot of work that's being done in this area. And even at the university, the book by Ibo Patel, Acts of Faith, is another way where the campus is becoming more encouraged to understand the different faiths because, you know, in our world today, we really need that kind of broadening of our experience and understanding of each other.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the climate in Champaign-Urbana is becoming more and more inviting to people of all different faiths.
Yes. Well, certainly, I think because of these different initiatives, it's making it more so. Obviously, I think there's a lot more that could be done, and this is one opportunity to try and bring people together, mm-hmm. to keep working together on this. Because it takes a lot of, I think, different efforts to make this, you know, possible over the long haul.
Many accomplishments, but the work is never done.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, how many people do you expect to take part, and do you need to register?
Yes, you do need to register. We're asking people to register by this coming Monday, although I'm sure we will not turn people away. Brother Joseph said he can work with any size group, so we want it to be very welcoming to people, no matter their age or background.
Okay, so how does one register?
Well, you can register through St. Patrick's. You can call 531-7003 or visit the website. It's www.stpaturbana.org. And on upcoming events, the One Light, Many Lamps will be on that website. So you can either call and ask for Laura Thebe, or visit the website that I just mentioned.
Okay. And there's a half-day option and a full-day option.
Yes. So because, again, we want people to participate at whatever point they can. So there's a morning session. It goes from 10 to 12:30. There's a lunch for an hour, and then from 1:30 to 4:30 will be another session.
Okay. Now, given that there's a lunch, is there a cost?
There is a cost, although, again, we did have a person that has provided some funds so that if someone needs the assistance, there is financial aid available. However, the cost is very reasonable because of the support by the co-sponsors. So it's $5 to attend the morning session, $5 for the afternoon, and $5 for a vegetarian lunch. So total cost is $15 or, again, depending on how long you're there.
Okay, very good. Sharon, thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste.
Sharon Monday Dorsey. She's a member of St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Urbana. One Light, Many Lamps is set for Saturday, October 17th at 10 a.m., beginning at 10 a.m., and it runs till 4:30 p.m. at St. Patrick's Parish Center, 708 West Main Street, Urbana. Registration deadline is Monday, October 12th, although there's a little wiggle room there. To call with a registration, 531-7003.
Earth and Sky.
For many years, we've heard that high cholesterol can clog arteries and increase heart attack risk. But new research suggests that high cholesterol might pose an additional danger. It can also change the normal heartbeat, which could lead to sudden death.
And it's an arrhythmia that's the terminating event, an abnormal electrical beat.
You're listening to Dr. David Fedida of the University of British Columbia. He explained that the heartbeat is generated by a small electrical current which flows through the heart. This electricity, in turn, relies on the cells of the heart.
Normally, the cells are like little batteries, and then when the impulse comes along in the heartbeat, these little channels, these little proteins, open these pores, and the voltage changes.
Fedida said these protein pores are key to conducting the heart's electrical current. In a 2009 study, Fedida found that high cholesterol affects the distribution of the protein channels across the cells.
If these little proteins aren't in the right place and opening and closing at the right time, then the heartbeat isn't normal.
He said the way cholesterol changes these proteins can cause the heartbeat to quicken or even fail. However, he said, the cholesterol-lowering drugs that many people with high cholesterol already take may help normalize the heart's electrical activity. Hear more science interviews at our website. I'm Lindsay Patterson. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their